Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Welcome back to the second part of the French Connection. As I told you in the first segment, we have a guest with us today from Great Britain. His name is Robert Owen. Mr. Owen has quite a remarkable resume. He is an inventor, a businessman, and a victim of a criminal activity of the group that we've been discussing repeatedly here on the French Connection. And I'm going to go right to Mr. Owen. Robert, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
It's great to have you with me here today, and welcome to the French Connection. You know, one of the things that we talked about privately was about your experience with the banking system in Britain and how they used a fraudulent bank. Actually, it was a bank document that they forged during you were on a trip to America when they did it, to confiscate from you your rights to a patent and to many other things that were in the millions of dollars in value. You want to recount a little bit of that so the people have an idea of what the bank actually did to you?
It's old history now, but effectively, I became involved in my own company in 1960 and developed my technology and know-how, and in the late 70s produced a patent which had several novelties in it which were worldwide recognized. We then went on to market that patent as a license to joint venture partners around the world, and in 1982 we opened our company in America, in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Which was operating under a license through Texas that we granted, and had several other countries in line at government level. And for some reason, the bank withdrew our facilities in our UK company when we were just selling off our UK company, because we'd now become international.
Right.
And obviously, having run a UK company for 20-odd years, I decided it was much more interesting to be, you know, operational around the world.
Right.
So we had been pressured to sell, not pressured, we'd been asked to sell by a major customer of ours, the UK company. And we did that. And a few days before the contract was due to be consummated, the bank withdrew our facilities, and the purchaser of our company told us that they would prefer to deal with the receiver.
They sent you into receivership erroneously.
Yeah, we had no knowledge that we were in receivership, but the purchaser of the UK company knew all about it. And even knew the name of the person that was to be appointed. That person was appointed, and the company was duly sold to them for a fraction of the contract price.
And so basically there was a signature on the document that was yours, but it was not yours.
This came in later. I challenged the way the bank had acted, because they were in breach of their facility letter with us. They
mm-hmm.
had no right to appoint a receiver at that stage, or, you know, we were within the contract. When that was challenged, and a case came up in the mid-80s, 1986-87, which was Crine versus Barclays. That's C-R-Y-N-E, Crine.
Yeah.
And he won a case on the basis that his contract didn't say, it just said the debt can be recalled under normal banking practices. And he asked for the banking practices to be specified. And the bank said, well, it's repayable upon demand. And the judge said, no, it's not. If you wanted it payable on demand, then you should have put it in the contract.
Mm-hmm.
So he won his case. And that was a precedent law case which I used in court. And then the lawyers for the bank changed the facility letter. They said, no, we're not relying on that letter now. that contract. We're relying on a new one, this one. And when I looked at it, I said, I've never seen this before. It was dated the 7th, or the covering letter was the 7th. It was allegedly signed by me on the 8th, and according to the bank, was put into their depository on the 10th. However, my passport and various other numerous documents proved that I was in America from the 1st through to the 14th on business.
So you weren't even there during the time they said you signed this stuff, so
no.
It was a forgery.
Yeah, well, I'd said, you know, if I was charged with, or if I'd have been said to be, a felon, a murderer or something, and my alibi was that I was 4,000 miles away with proof, like the passport and everything else, then they would have had a very weak case to proceed upon.
That's right.
But in the event, when the police became involved in fraud division, they went to the bank, and the bank had lost the contract, the original. And then, apparently, they said that they had inadvertently destroyed it, so it could never be proved under forensic tests that it was or was not my signature. So the case collapsed.
Well, you know, so basically what you uncovered is what you ended up finding to date is a series of actions that these people have taken similar to this, and you've actually got a website involved with exposing these kinds of crimes. Could you give my listeners the name of your website?
Yeah, we go under the name of SAFE, S-A-F-E, which is Struggle Against Financial Exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's then SAFE, SAFE-online.org.
And I've been to the site, and I want to let everybody know what it is there are many different, he treats many different cases. In fact, some more recent, some of his own work is on there. And basically, ladies and gentlemen, he talks about the banking system in Britain being compromised criminally. At the very highest levels, and it's astonishing to me when I looked at it that this is the kind of activity that your banks are involved in, Robert.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to take an objective view on this. That okay, the banks are not going to shoot themselves in the leg, nor is the government going to blow out an industry that makes a lot of money for the country. So there has to be an illusion of probity.
Yeah.
Within the banking system. And this is the problem. If your bank manager rips you off and you catch him out, the bank won't prosecute him because of the publicity. He will have his legs slapped and told to go away and not do it again, but they won't prosecute because it would bring into disrepute the credibility of the bank.
Right.
So, as far as it goes, you stand no chance of undermining or getting justice because the bank's probity is paramount, even to government.
Well, now, here's an interesting thing that happened. You ended up pushing as many appeals as you could get, and at one point, because of your demands, you were placed in a position to have access to some very important information. You want to explain what that information was and how you got to that position?
Yeah, I presume you mean that when the police reneged and said there wasn't enough evidence to proceed.
Yeah.
The following week, I took the same evidence and laid it before the City of London Magistrates Court. And those magistrates issued summonses against the bank and its chairman for forgery.
Yeah.
Now, that was a kind of one battle won. I hadn't won the war, but I'd won a battle.
Yeah.
But when the case was brought back into court for them to be heard, obviously the chairman didn't arrive. He was represented by a team of lawyers.
Yeah.
And I was deemed to be in abuse of the court's practice. My case was thrown out by the new chairman of the magistrates.
Mm.
And since then, by the way, the rules have changed. As a lay person, you cannot go before a lay court without it first going through the district judge,
right,
who will deem whether you're allowed to take your case into court.
Right. But you got access to some information as a result of this proceedings.
Yeah, because the court issued summonses, it ceased to be me versus the bank, and it became the Queen versus the bank, and I became public prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, I was able to access certain documentation, which led me to certain records, whereby the Bank of England, who at the time was a nationalised, a corporation,
right,
and the agent of the Treasury, the Bank of England in 1977 formed a company called Bank of England Nominees Limited.
Bank of what now?
Bank of England Nominees Limited.
Okay.
And this was a £100 company with two shares issued, one to the Secretary of the Bank of England and one to its Deputy Chairman. And I question why or what was this formed for, because the Bank of England, as a Royal Charter company, had more protection and secrecy than the Ministry of Defence.
Yeah.
And yet they set up this nominee company to hold, obviously, assets or something without declaring who owns them.
Okay.
Now
what did this lead you to suspect and to begin to investigate?
Well, if you act as a nominee or an agent or attorney, either solely or jointly, you are effectively representing those people anonymously.
Right.
So it begs the question, who owned or why was it formed and what have you? Now, the Bank of England Nominees Limited has never traded. I challenged the minister, Melanie Johnson, at the Treasury at the time, and asked what it was all about. And she told me in writing that the Bank of England Nominees was a wholly owned subsidiary of Bank of England and was granted exemption by the Minister of State from disclosing its requirements under Companies Act Section 27, I think. And it was said it was because it was considered undesirable that these disclosures should apply to certain categories of shareholders. So then, who then are the shareholders?
Mm-hmm.
I.e., who owns the Bank of England is where my mind went. And so I alleged that the Bank of England was, sometime after 1977, privatized.
Yeah.
And because of its share transfer documents potentially being held by or within the nominee company, it was a closed loop, i.e. Bank of England nominees held the shares which controlled the company, i.e. the Bank of England.
And did not even have to disclose who they were.
No. So it was a closed loop. You had the tail wagging the dog. The people that are licensed by the Bank of England, i.e. the high street banks, suddenly find themselves in charge of their licensor.
So basically you've got a situation where a private enterprise, a private entity has been sanctioned by Department of State to form a government, form an extra governmental, a non-governmental system that controls the finances of the nation.
Yeah.
Now, does Gordon Brown work with these people?
Don't forget that the Bank of England was formed in 1694.
Right.
As a private company, and it was granted its permit by William III.
Okay.
And because he was in trouble, he couldn't pay his soldiers to go fight battles in France and wherever. They paid $1.2 million as a loan to the king for the franchise of the UK money.
Hmm. And who was this that paid for that?
Well, that's never declared. Because it was a Royal Charter company.
Well, according to David Pidcock, it's the Rothschild fortune that was paid for that, right?
Yeah, well, if David may be aware of that, I can't prove that, but because it's all held in nominee shares. But don't forget, it was taken off them in 1946-7 by Clement Attlee when he nationalised the Bank of England. After the war, the new Labour government nationalised the Bank of England and the coal industry and the steel industry, the railways. It nationalised everything. But the first one it did was the Bank of England.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the evidence that I obtained led me to believe that the Bank of England was reprivatised by Thatcher in 1979. And that was the first privatisation of all the privatisations when our assets that were owned by the country were sold back to the country. I think it was the biggest con ever going.
Well, and here's the interesting thing. You found out some other information about the reserves of Nazi Germany being held within the Bank of England's structure prior to 46.
Apparently, through Barclays Bank, which I ironically used to have the spread eagle as its logo, which was also the Federal States of Germany's logo,
mm-hmm.
They acted for the federal government in Germany, the Third Reich and everything else during the war years, and were given clean passage across Europe in order to take documents and stuff both ways.
Now let's discuss for a second, because you've looked into this.
There is another interesting point.
Go ahead.
You should be aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
A member of Parliament is prohibited from asking a question about the Bank of England.
No, I'm not surprised. No, I'm not.
No, it's set down. An MP cannot ask a question.
Well, I'm not surprised at all. And in fact, we're in a similar situation in the United States. And I want to talk about some parallels just for a second for the listeners. We've got the Schieff family, the Kahn family, two portions of the Rothschild family. We've got Lehman Brothers, and we've got the Rothschild Bank of Italy also involved in our Federal Reserve System. Basically, they are the owners of the American money system. So in both Britain, where most financial transactions happen in the City of London, and New York, where the second largest number of transactions take place, in both instances, they are controlled by the same group of people. Am I wrong in saying so?
I would think you are absolutely correct.
That's right. So now, here's the kicker here.
I mean, one thing, a quote I might give you is that Meyer Amschel, the founder of Rothschild's dynasty, was reported to have told his five sons, "Let me control a nation's money, and I care not who writes its laws."
Well, that's exactly the truth, and we're in a situation now where this same group controls the ECB, which is the European Central Bank.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And so now we've got the ECB, the Bank of England, and the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States, which is not a governmental entity in all three cases, controlling, I would say, somewhere between 60 and 70% of the world's financial movement. And not only that, they're also involved in derivatives, in the financing and controlling of stock transactions within the bourses. These people have their hands in all of these activities, all of them. And, I mean, as far back as the gold-fixing price, that was a Rothschild-owned enterprise. I mean, the Rothschilds got to fix the gold price every day in a private session, ladies and gentlemen. You have no idea how sold out the world is right now. And this little thing we're talking with Robert Owen about right now, Robert, you know, How bad is it, and how bad down the road are we? I mean, look, we don't have control of anything we do with finances anymore, do we?
No, I'm afraid, nor does government either. I mean, the tail's wagging the dog, if you know the expression.
Yes, I do.
As far as I can see, and especially with SAFE, with our group, when we set up, or, you know, when we the group became an all-party secretariat to an all-party parliamentary group in against financial exploitation in Westminster, we now have 127 MPs signed up because they're getting so many complaints about banks. We
so
have,
the banks are fleecing their customers.
Well, yeah, but if you looked on the website, you could see the National Irish Bank, where they were prosecuted by the government, and directors have gone to prison for what is going on throughout, we know, in Britain, whereby they what they call greys accounts. If a manager's branch is not making the proper returns, money-wise, you know, it's not making enough profit, he's told to go and greys the accounts, which means he goes through the files and adds 500 here, 1,000 there, depending what the account can take. And you don't know about it.
In other words, he steals off the top of your account balance.
Yeah. Also, there's another expression called loading, which the banks use. And a manager will be told to load. And this means if he quotes you 2% over base rate for your overdraft,
yeah,
he'll charge you 4% over base rate. Now, you can't tell on a day, on a week-to-week or month-to-month bank statement basis on what your interest charges are.
That's right.
And in Ireland, the video is on our website. Of interestingly, the video that went out, I was on holiday in Portugal and saw it on Sky News.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't go out in Britain. And it didn't go out on Reuters in Britain. Well,
yep,
it went out around the world, but Britain was censored.
That's freedom, right? Isn't that freedom?
We have a copy of, we got a copy of the newscast, which is about 10 minutes long. And we put it up on our website. We even gave a copy to the then Treasury Minister, Stephen Timms, in a meeting, and he alleged not to have known about it, which he did.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, you know, of course, here's the situation, Robert. We've got a worldwide conspiracy right now of a group of people who are pretty virtually untouchable by us. If you go into a courtroom, they've got it controlled. All they would need to do in a courtroom is tell, say, Barclays Bank president says to the judge, look, we just we expanded your line of credit by, you can buy a $1 million house, and we'll give it to you at 3% if you find in our favor. Well, bingo, bango, this judge goes, you know, we're finding in Barclays' favor, and then a couple of months later he goes and gets himself a 3% loan on a brand new $1 million house.
Yeah, I mean, I can, in my particular case, the judge on the appeal was an acting QC acting as a judge, and he obviously found against me.
Mm-hmm.
6 months after, he was made up to a full judge, and his son became the head of the bank's legal department.
So what are you doing now?
Let me read you.
Yeah.
On SAFE's website, you'll see the Lord Mayor's banquet for banks in London, and part of that shows when they're sitting down to eat, they say grace. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now you and I would probably say, you know, for what we're about to receive, great, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Let me read you what they say, and it's on our video. Father, for money, pfennigs and francs, Deutschmarks and sterling, we yield thee our thanks. remembering always that in God's eyes we are brothers. Now, the Lord, the Treasury Minister was there, and all the chairmen of all the banks were there. And they all said, Amen. We've got it on video.
Yeah. Well, you know something, the world is waking up to the crimes, to the lies, to the deception, to the deceit, the treachery. The facts are, Robert, that we are in a very last stages of freedom. I mean, I think I'm watching it leak away from almost every single corner that I look. I'm watching freedom being destroyed. What's happening, I believe, now is a last-ditch effort by these criminals to consolidate their power worldwide. And I'm wondering what you think is on the horizon for us. I mean, do you agree with that assessment, and what do you think is coming?
Well, I think it's awesome. I was advised that the identity cards that we're obliged to have now, the intelligent chip that you have on your card,
mm-hmm.
they've got a equipment that will read 7 chips a second at 15 meters range.
Yeah.
So as you walk off a station platform or along a pavement, you can be scanned, and your identity card can be read.
That's right.
Up to 15 meters away, so they
That's
know
right.
who and what you are.
Well, but, not only that, they
I
know
mean,
who
we,
you're with.
We've turned the tables on them with our database at SAFE, because we are proving systemic fraud
mm-hmm.
throughout the country, because everybody that registers on our website or with us has to submit a form and backed up by a statement of truth. That data goes onto our computer database, and we're now able to identify groups of the same named people in certain cities, all involved in ripping people off.
Yeah.
And these are the same firm of solicitors, accountants, the same bank managers.
Are they from a specific group that you can identify?
Well, no. They could have all gone to school or graduated together. They could be in the same golf club, the same Masonic lodge, the same synagogue, the same mosque. I don't know. But it is showing up across the UK that when people are made bankrupt, they lose their homes, they are attacked. All sorts of things can happen. They even have contracts for murder taken out on them by the banks. The same names are showing up across the country.
Well, you know what? That's why I had you come on today. And what we're trying to develop here, on the French Connection is an idea of how the controllers are destroying us. And this is an element to that puzzle, I believe. And
yeah, they can't destroy us because it's not. Why destroy the person that you live off? You know,
well,
we are their bread and butter. Without the ingenuity and industrial nature of the individual, these leeches that live off us by interest and stuff, can't survive.
Well, I think they've got some other things in mind, and we could get into that in another show, but I believe that they're trying to set up a more powerful, greater Israel at the moment. And I think that that's their goal.
I'll pass on that one. I've traveled the world when I was doing oil pollution, and was amazed on how the religious factor fades away when you've got to travel, say, from Saudi into Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
And vice versa and things like that. And you would see people in Tel Aviv who you'd met earlier in Jakarta or Riyadh.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to them, the barriers don't count.
No, they don't. And I got to tell you something.
Because I was dealing in oil pollution and advising governments and stuff and the International Maritime Organization, etc., it was amazing that I used to have somebody occasionally come with me from MOD who wanted to get into a particular country and came in on the back of my environmental ticket. When we went through immigration, I didn't see him again till I was due to check on board to leave.
Yeah. Well, how are you doing now, Robert? Are you still in business?
No. I mean, my wife and I, we have no children. We are the end of our line. And I did not want what I'd learned to go to the grave with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we can perpetuate the knowledge like the banks do, then we can stand a chance of standing up to them.
Well, that's right. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do here, is to share with as many people as will listen all of the nuances and all of the criminal conspiratorial mesh that has been built up over generations. This is hundreds of years of criminality that we're talking about here. It just shows itself in the modern time. But the fact is, these people that we're discussing have been working in these ways for many, many, many generations.
Oh yeah, I mean, go back, look in the Bible. What was it? The love of money is the root of all evil.
That's right.
And Jesus threw out the money lenders out of the house, saying, "You've made my house into a den of thieves."
Well, the den of thieves are back in charge.
Pardon?
The den of thieves are back in charge.
Yeah, exactly. Sick, but there you go.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. We've come to the end of the French Connections broadcast for today. And I will be contacting you, Robert, for more information on all of these issues. You know, this is an ongoing story, and for me, counting another man like yourself who's dedicated to finding the truth as part of the people, the network that I know, it's a proud thing for me, Robert Owen. And I wish you all the best for you and your family. And I will be in touch with you soon, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for being on.
Good night.
All right, bye-bye now.